gospel reading is from Matthew. And as I read it, I want you to pay attention to how the religious leaders that Jesus encounters are distracted from the real purpose of what God has created you and I for, the real reason that he has come here, and how they're distracted by other things and how Jesus deals with that. One Sabbath, Jesus was strolling with his disciples through a field of ripe grain. Hungry, the disciples were pulling off the heads of grain and munching on them. Some Pharisees reported them to Jesus. "Your disciples are breaking the Sabbath rules." Jesus said, "Really? Didn't you ever read what David and his companions did when they were hungry? How they entered the sanctuary and ate fresh bread off the altar, bread that no one but the priests were allowed to eat. And didn't you ever read in God's law that priests carry out their temple duties, break the Sabbath rules all the time, and it's not held against them?" There's far more at stake here than religion. If you had any idea what this scripture meant, "I prefer a flexible heart to an inflexible ritual," you wouldn't be nitpicking like this. The Son of Man is no lackey to the Sabbath. He's in charge. If you haven't realized, this isn't your normal version. This is the Message version, by the way. So when Jesus left the field, he entered their meeting place. There was a man there with a crippled hand. They said to Jesus, "Is it legal then to heal on the Sabbath?" They were baiting him. He replied, "Is there a person here who, finding one of your lambs fallen into a ravine, would not, even though it was the Sabbath, pull it out? Surely kindness to people is as legal as kindness to animals." And then he said to the man, "Hold out your hand." And he held it out, and it was healed. The Pharisees walked out furious, sputtering about how they were going to ruin Jesus. Well, I hope you can see the distractions there. You know, they are focused on the rules and following the rules that God has laid down. And they're so concerned about them that they are distracted from what God is calling us to be focused on. And that is what Jesus said was the biggest and most important commandment of all, which is what? Loving your brothers as you love yourself. Loving God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. You know, those two together are the most important. Everything else falls or hangs on those two commandments. Anything else you can think of. You can go to the Ten Commandments. You can go to any other commandment you find. And they all are hooked upon the love of God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and loving your neighbor as yourself. For instance, you go to the Ten Commandments, "Thou shalt not steal." Well, if you're loving your neighbor, you don't steal from your neighbor. That would be wrong. So it's very simplistic, yet it's difficult for us because distractions come in such a powerful and frantic pace at us, and we often get ourselves distracted by so many things that we lose sight of the true purpose that God has called us to. And we're distracted for a lot of reasons. We can be distracted, some people are distracted because they have a mental struggle with like ADHD or something like that. That's understandable. But that's a different kind of distraction. We're talking about distractions that come like from within, like perfectionism. Perfectionism can be a terrible distraction. As someone who suffered with it, I understand how it can get in the way of doing the right things because you get focused on such minute little details that it keeps you from focusing on the big picture. I knew a pastor once who I was told by a secretary I worked for, she said the former pastor that she had to work for was so consumed with, and as I call them, distractions, that he would sit in his office. She would type out the bulletin. Now, back in those days, it was typed, not on a computer where you could organize it well. And then she would give it to him, and then he would sit there with a red pen and a ruler, and he'd measure out the margins, and how he wanted everything to go and made red marks all over so she could move all the things to make it just right. And it used to drive her crazy because she worked hard to get it right, but he would find like, oh, this needs to move over one space, you know, move this line over one space so it lines up better. And he would spend all his time on that. Well, let me tell you something. Pastors, we did not go to seminary to learn to make sure bulletins are perfectly organized and set. That wasn't our job. There's no class on it. This is perfectionism that got in the way of fulfilling our duties. We were called to be pastors, not to be editors. And so I've seen many pastors, including myself with my own struggles with perfectionism, get caught up in things that are not important and lose sight of the bigger goal. Perfectionism is a distraction. It causes us to focus on trying to make things perfect rather than accepting that things are sometimes good enough and that there's more important things than worrying about the little tiny, tiny details. Because they won't be remembered. Someday, 100 years from now, it doesn't even take that long, the church will not be responding and saying, going back and saying, remember when the bulletins were perfect? You know, that will not be their concern. They'll be remembering what they've done as a community. Another distraction that can get in the way that's internal is an uncompromising attitude where we just will not compromise with other things. It's like, it's got to be our way. We're the only ones that know what's really going on, and so we can't bend a little bit for others and find a way to mutually get along. And we see today in our world how uncompromising attitudes lead to gridlock and nothing happening. Progress stops. People are left behind. The important things are not done. Because uncompromising attitudes stop us in our tracks. I don't know what he said, but he's right. And also, I think another internal, is vulnerability and fear. You know, we spent 6 weeks on vulnerability, but that whole idea of fear, fear can be a distraction. It keeps us from taking a step forward. It keeps us from moving ahead. And so it becomes a distraction to the big picture, to the big goal. And instead we look for ways out. Of course, there are many external things that could be distracting things to us as well. We can be distracted today. The social media, totally a distraction for me that I fight, but don't fight very strong against. But I get caught up in the Facebook and doing all kinds of things, you know, reading things and getting upset and angry, and it distracts me from maybe what I should be doing because I get focused on, you know, reading every detail about everything that's going on and looking for articles that continue to back up what I think, and it starts to weigh you down. And I don't think we're supposed to be worn down like that. The psalmist kind of speaks to that condition with a slight prescription for it all. In Psalm 119, verse 16, the psalmist says, "Before I learned to answer you to God, I wandered all over the place. Now I'm in step with your word." Before I learned to answer you, the psalmist says, before I learned to focus on you, God, and focus on what you think and what you want, I was going all over the place looking at everything. I listened to every voice, every concern, and I got distracted into everything else, and I missed your call. Look at Jesus, how he deals with those distractions. He is focused on one thing, and that is to bring the presence of God and the reconciliation and healing of God into the lives of people. And the Pharisees are trying to distract him from that. You know, well, what about the law? The law says you can't do this, and these are breaking the rules. And they're like focused on these little details, and they're missing the big picture that God is trying to reach us, trying to reconcile with us. And Jesus is focused on that. So when he is tempted to be distracted, like, you know, you're breaking the law here, you're focused on the minutiae. You think the law keeps you from helping people? Keeps you from eating when you're hungry? Do you think God is more concerned about your little ritual than he is about the life and the hope and the healing of his children? This is what Jesus responds with. He is focused. He knows what God is really concerned about. And we have to kind of bring ourselves back to that. We have to focus on what is God concerned about? Is he concerned about our rituals? Or is he concerned, as he says to them, about remembering the scripture, the flexible heart versus the inflexible ritual? We get caught up in that too. That's another distraction for us. We have our rituals. We might not say rituals. We have our habits. We have our, well, we've always done it this way concerns. It happens in the church a lot. You know, there's always that, you know, well, we never sang that hymn before, which is a sort of code for don't ever pick that hymn again. But there's, you know, there are things that, you know, we do and say that get us also focused and distracted away from our real focus, get us distracted towards dealing with rituals in our lives. This is how I do it. This is the way it should be done. And that leads to an inflexible ritual where it has to be done this way. I mean, this worship service is itself one of those breakaways from tradition. You know, that's why this is not the traditional worship service. The traditional worship service, you know, we have the three hymns, call to worship starts the service. You know, read the scriptures. You know, it's all formulated. There's a liturgy. We follow it. And I love the liturgy. And it has a lot of meaning for me. It's something I grew up with. It's something that I've studied. And so it means something to me. But it's not the only way to worship God. If I got caught up in the inflexibility of that and started saying that this is the only way you can worship God, you have to follow this liturgy just the way it was written by somebody 250 years ago. Well, back then it was pretty radical for them. What do you mean we're not chanting anymore? What do you mean we're singing these hymns? This radical stuff that Charles Wesley wrote. That's ridiculous. You know, today, you know, we don't just sing hymns, we sing songs. We have drums. We had drums and tambourines and percussion instruments in the Old Testament and in the New Testament. There's no one way to worship God. Worship is an attitude of the heart. So we can't let rituals distract us from what's going on in our heart. We can't let a screen that is so dark and the light in there distract us from putting our heart into it. If we can't sing along and we don't know the words, we can close our eyes and listen and be in prayer with it. I'm recalling my mom talking about in her church, they started a liturgical dance group. Have you, any of you seen liturgical dance? A few of you? Did you ever have it here? Once? One time. And I'm sure it went over big because they only had one. They would do that, and there was a person who sat near my mom who would, when the liturgical dance started, would stand up and say, "This isn't worship, and I don't know what we're doing with this stuff. This is terrible." And get up and walk out of church every week when it would happen to make a statement. My mom thought to herself, "Look, if you don't like something, you know that you know you can't like everything that happens in the worship service. You know, put your head down and be in prayer." If it's not something that means, because some people are sitting there saying, this is so moving, it's connecting me to God in a different way than I'm used to. So we can't let our preferences always decide everybody else's preferences. We're here to worship God, and it's our heart that matters. So we have to get these distractions out of it. Another prescription for this is, the basic prescription for all this is really to focus our eyes on Christ. The old WWJD, what would Jesus do? I like also to go beyond it. What would Jesus think? What would Jesus care about in this moment? What would be important to Jesus at this moment? Would it be my thoughts, or would it be something beyond my thoughts? Would it be something God sees that I'm not seeing? Is it this person's, you know, somebody comes to me and is upset about something and maybe taking it out on me? I can get defensive, but maybe what I should be saying is, God, what's going on here? Is there something going on in this person's life that has them upset, that they're distracted from the real purpose you've called them to? Maybe I need to listen to them a little longer and ask them some questions. I think I've shared with you about the time, I've shared this a few times, so I always forget if it's been here or somewhere else, but I went to visit someone in a nursing home once, and she'd been in there, and I hadn't been there for quite a while. When I finally got to see her, I walked in, and she said, "Well, look who finally showed up." And my initial reaction, my personal feeling was, well, I've got a life too. You know, I'm busy. You know, you think you're the only one in a nursing home? You think other people aren't needing me to see them? I'm trying to do, you know, I've got 500 people that want me at some point. And I was like really frustrated about the whole thing. But I didn't say any of that. I just kind of kept that to myself. And I was like, well, I'm sorry. You know, I'm here now. And, you know, eventually we had a talk, but I was really bitter after that experience. It's the kind of experience that says, you know what, I'm not going to go visit people in nursing homes at all. You know, it doesn't have the effect they want, like now they'll come more often. Instead, it's like, you know what, I'm done with you. So I voiced my concern to a colleague that I saw like the next day, and I said, I don't believe it. You know, it's like, what do they think? We don't have anything else to do. And he said, you know, I had that happen to me once. Person was real upset and said, you know, well, you finally showed up, didn't you? And he responded by saying, it sounds like you've missed me. And she said, well, I have missed you. And then it opened the door to a whole different conversation. And so I've tried to remember that for myself, that sometimes what people are voicing is not so much their anger at me, but their own pain and suffering that they're going through, and I need to listen to that and reframe the conversation into something that fits where they may be. And that requires asking, what is God thinking at this moment? What does God see at this moment? What does God care about at this moment? Does he care about my feelings and me being right? Or does he care about this person who's stuck in a nursing home and is feeling abandoned and needs someone to care about? Her or him? It's easy for us to be distracted, folks. God knows how distracting the world can be. There's things pulling at us each from different sides saying, I need you for this, you need to do this, you need to take care of this. And there's always good reasons given for why it is, but we need to be able to say, Lord, what's most important in your eyes right now? Where do you need me? And focus on that. And that comes from focusing on Christ. Jesus shows us that he's not distracted because he has a mission. He knows what he's here for. He knows what his purpose is. And he's given you and me the same purpose. That's the beauty of it. We're here as ambassadors. We're here as brothers and sisters of Christ. We've been called and set apart, not because we're special and God says, oh, I like you better than I like them, but he's pulled us apart and said, listen, you can do some of the work that I can't do physically. You can be my eyes. You can be my hands. You can be my feet now. You can speak my words. You can be my heart to people who are feeling lost and abandoned and perhaps distracted in their own right from what's important. And you can help them get back to it. So I urge you as you worship the rest of this morning here and then as you go out into the world today to remember that God has a main purpose for each one of us here. And that's love. And I'm not talking about love like, oh, I feel something for you, I feel this. It's a love that we feel from God that says, that person matters. That person matters, and I need to show them they matter. Love is an action. It's a verb. It's not an adjective about what we feel, but a verb of what we do. So we need to show that wherever we go. And if we can keep that focus on what we're doing, we can transform the world.